The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Join the Save Our Shirt movement today. More at saveourshirt.co.uk.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to make my country again.
Do it then. What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Now you're welcome along to the Football Show. Kevin Kilbane alongside me. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Joe.
We're still here?
Yeah, we are. We're flying along.
A few things to get to this evening. We'll reflect on the weekend's football. We'll talk about the situation. Well, situations regarding Bury and Bolton, neither of which very good. You're from that part of the world.
Yeah, that's where I grew up. Played a lot against those clubs growing up, certainly, as well. The youth team and at schoolboy level, yeah.
We'll come to that in a second. You were saying you're on the... you have a prestigious honour this year, Kev. Important duty. You're on the...
Yeah, I was talking about that to you off air, Joe, as well, but I knew you'd bring it up, so...
I allowed to bring it up or not?
I think we are, I can't see there being a big deal around it, yeah.
Okay, so what exactly are you?
I am helping select the shortlist for the PFA Player of the Month, yeah.
Just this month or every month?
Every month, yeah.
Every month? Season, yeah. For the whole season?
The whole season, yeah.
And what do you have to do to earn such an honour? Actually saying is, how many of you must have said no?
Yes, good point. Good point. Well made, Joe. You're very good at that. I don't know. I was asked to do it. And
how many Premier League games have you played, give or take?
Around about 330, I think.
I think that's enough. Yeah.
Do you qualify on that?
And you're also at a lot of games. I'd say they want people who are watching football.
Yeah, I think that'd be the case. Yeah, I think it's getting out to games for two a weekend, some weekends, maybe even three at times. But most weekends you're at a game, so that's the best thing about it. Yeah.
So if you had to give your first month's nominees, how many nominees get?
Well, originally we were given was it around 30? We were given. Sorry, I'll just get this up here as well. Yeah, 30. We have to whittle it down to six, give our six nominees in, and that's for the fans to vote on.
Per month?
Per month, yeah.
Okay.
So it will be a fans' vote. And so basically, it was goalkeepers, defenders, midfielders, and you get three goalkeepers, say, four defenders, four midfielders, and four attackers, and then you've just got to give six people from that.
And are you allowed to potentially pick six strikers if there have been six brilliant strikers?
Yeah.
You don't have to pick like a goalkeeper or a defender.
Not at all. Okay. If you feel as though that players in position, and I'm sure as well you could probably throw a name in as well that you feel as though has played very well in the three or four games that you've seen in that month as well.
Go on then. Who are your big six?
Big six, yeah. I'll give you my six without even telling you the nominations.
Yeah,
out of my six, yeah, I've gone Tyrone Mings, Kevin De Bruyne, Raheem Sterling, Timo Pukki, Ashley Barnes and Mason Mount.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So that was...
Can't really argue with Pukki.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mason Mount, Jose Mourinho didn't think did very well at Old Trafford.
Yeah, I agree with that as well, but I think the next two games...
Tammy?
It was either...
Tammy and there were two goals against Norwich.
Tammy hasn't been as consistent as Mount, I don't think. That was a good game at the weekend for him, but he'd struggled before then. My last pick was Mount or Salah. It was down to those two. And I went for Mount because I just think that as a young lad, I don't think Mo Salah is going to get Player of the Month. I think it'd be between Pukki and Sterling. They would be my choice anyway out of the two, if I'm going to go and be asked outright who I think it would be. And I just think Mount, just with the introduction that he's had into the Premier League, big one as well. After having a poor game in his first match as well, yeah. The next two he's played well, so I just went with him.
What criteria do you use in your mind? As in, someone puts in Dennis Irwin-esque 8 out of 10 performances across four games.
It's a good shout.
Versus Firmino scoops the ball over the head of a defender and hits a volley.
Yeah, well, do you know what it is?
Did you see that scoop over the head, by the way?
Yeah, did you? Yeah.
Why is he not nominated? What's the story here? I've never seen that before in a match.
Yeah, the list that we've got originally, so say you'd have, I'm going from bottom to top here just quickly, so it'll say Mo Salah, 3 goals and 1 assist, so it tells you you've been involved in 4 goals. So, yeah.
Why is he not in then?
No, exactly, but Ashley Barnes, 4 goals. So Ashley Barnes, I think, at Burnley.
Is Salah not better than Mount this month?
Yes, but that was the thing. That was the thing between the two of them. I think Mount's 2 goals and 2 assists.
Okay.
So as a midfielder, playing the Chelsea side, a young side, I just went with him, and it was
that's a fair enough point. Yeah.
It was literally a 50-50 call, and anyone could make that argument for Salah, and I'd say yeah. After the second goal that he scored at the weekend was just sensational, wasn't it? It was a great goal. But I think Mount scored two good goals, and I think he's had an influence on Chelsea given what happened in that first game when they capitulated second half. So that was the only reason why I went with that. So they just give you a little detail of what that player has done in the month, and if you have seen them, which I would have seen most of them anyway, and you can make your own opinion from that.
But again, you see, Firmino scooped the ball over his head.
But the thing is with you, Joe, you are like a FIFA player.
No, I'm not. No.
You're that guy that knows all the stats on the players that come to you in the street and they will tell you like Messi is 92 at this and 91 at that.
None of that stuff. That's not how I watch football. I'm not a stats person at all.
I'd say you are.
That's why I want Firmino in, for that bit of aesthetic.
Is it? Yeah.
Magic. Yeah.
Well, I was listening to you last night.
Have you ever seen anyone scoop the ball over the head? Like that, in open play.
Do you know what? I tell you who would make an argument for that, and he's always on the show, who probably would have done that. I wouldn't have seen it. 100% he would have done it.
Kenny Cunningham.
No. Pat Nevin.
Oh, yeah.
Pat Nevin had the scoop in the bag.
Okay, Pat, yeah, I'd accept that. Yeah.
Pat would have done that. And you're probably asking that next week when he's on. Definitely Pat would have done
that. I didn't think to ask him.
Yeah, Pat, that is Pat's game. 100% that would have been Pat's game. Do me a favour as well.
Here we go.
Don't call Tammy Abraham Tabby. Tammy, please. I don't want you getting in the habit of calling him Tammy. There's no need for it, Joe. You're not on first name basis with the lad, so.
With Tammy, I am. He's the exception that proves the rule.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping.
Yeah, you're buying into Tammy, aren't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, I am. I think it's a Cinderella story. Who are your other picks, sorry? Mings?
Yeah, Mings.
Has he been good? That's passed me by slightly.
Yeah, I was at the game last night. The games that I've been at, I would have picked one from every game that I probably would have been at over the last couple of weeks as well. And that was one he stood out for me at the weekend, Tyrone Mings for Villa. I thought he defended really well. And for all that, Everton were quite poor, really. But I just think his positional sense, and he's been key for Villa and how they've started this season and how they're going to continue to go on this season.
Okay.
So, sorry, if I get it up here now again. Who did I say? I said
Mings.
Mings, Mount, Ashley Barnes, yeah. Timo Pukki,
yeah.
And who was the sixth? I don't know, Joe, bloody hell. You're killing me there now, actually.
Isn't that good then? Yeah. Oh, you had De Bruyne and Sterling.
De Bruyne and Sterling, bloody hell, yeah.
They're just standard.
De Bruyne's got to be pushing him, hasn't he? Because De Bruyne is just like, he's just beautiful.
So, I haven't talked to you about the football so far in a while. Let's start with Villa Park, given that you were there. I watched the last 25 minutes or so on Friday night.
Yeah, what did you think? I heard you talking about it yesterday. What did you think of it? I think the last 20 minutes you would have got a good gauge on Everton trying to push on.
Yes, that was the dynamic. At that stage, Villa
Obi
had
came
their goal.
On and Keane came on for Everton, the two big signings over the summer. So, yeah, you'd have got a good gauge on how that was.
You got a sense of Villa with something to hang on for. Yeah. The stadium, loving it. Like the atmosphere looked amazing. Looked like it was a good game.
Best atmosphere I've seen at Villa, Joe. Definitely. Yeah. I used to go and watch Villa when I played at West Brom midweek games and things. So I used to go and watch them a lot. And playing at Villa, played so many times at Aston Villa. And at times it's been difficult for Villa players to play there because of the ill feeling or the bad feeling around the club.
Mm.
And they found it a little bit intimidating, those home players. Geez, nothing like that the other night. It was absolutely amazing. I mean, everything that you expect from Villa. Villa, I love playing at the ground. It's one of my favourite grounds to play at. Would have been one of my favourite grounds to play at. And that atmosphere, the whole time, particularly that second goal that they scored, it was unreal. It was brilliant. It was great to be at a game when that type of atmosphere has come about, yeah.
I did watch it more so with Everton in my mind. You know, sometimes when you watch a game, you're often watching it from one team's point of view.
If
you support a team, you're watching them more than anything. But people have talked up Everton and said they've had a great summer and they're going to be exciting to watch. Pat Nevin has said that to us, and I'm sure he's going to be right in the long term. Mm. But I was almost, I figured Villa will sit in, and I was watching Grealish a little bit and Wesley. But I was like, let's see Everton now under a bit of pressure to break down a side. What are they about?
Yeah.
You couldn't really discern any great pattern,
no.
any great chances but, created. There was the Theo Walcott chance, which was gilt-edged. And you know, if Sterling and Walcott were of a similar vintage for a while, Walcott's kind of stayed and Sterling's taken off, you know.
Is that the coaching? Were they at the similar sort of level?
Well, what do you think, actually?
I'd agree.
Do you think Sterling always would have taken off a little bit?
No, I didn't, because I still had my doubts on Sterling when he went from Liverpool. We were having the conversation after his first season at Man City. Is Sterling...
Will there be a ceiling?
Is that it? Yeah. Is that it from him? Yeah. And clearly, he's listened to what his manager said. His manager's worked incredibly with him on the training ground, worked on just little finer details to him. Now, all of a sudden, he's finishing his... sensational. He's getting right in between the goals to score goals.
I always thought finishing would have been the hardest thing for somebody to coach another player to do.
Yeah.
You know, because Walcott now is incredibly experienced. He's played massive games even for his country. Mm. So, you know, scoring a goal for Everton against Aston Villa on a Friday night is not really going to define his career or not. And yet still, when the chance came to him, he just almost froze a little bit and got tight the way Sterling has stopped doing it.
Oh, totally. He scored, I think it's over 100 goals for Arsenal he scored. I think I'm right in saying that, Walcott. He scored a lot of goals in his career. A lot of goals would have been running on to quality footballers' passes. And you'd think then, yeah, his finishing at times has been okay, but he doesn't strike me as the most technically gifted player. Mm. You may be proven wrong. If I worked alongside him day to day, I might be corrected on that. But I don't necessarily see him as this player that's going to be able just to hit nice passes into people. Everything's maybe got to be on the run at full belt and finish.
Yeah.
Because he's that quick, he would have got himself in that position so often. Mm. And again, that's why you'd maybe look at Sterling at the ages they were at when he went to Arsenal, Theo Walcott, when Sterling's gone to Man City, or even Liverpool when he's broken the first team. You'd be putting him on a par, you would be, both with unbelievable pace, both had real vulnerabilities in front of goal, and I don't think Walcott has changed in any way. In fact, he's probably gone backwards because maybe his pace has diminished a little bit as he's approached 30 and maybe beyond that. He's never really going to have an influence on the game. If size dropped deep against Walcott, he has no influence on the game because he doesn't make as clever runs as Raheem Sterling. If you see Sterling, size drop on the edge of the penalty area, he'll continue to make runs off the shoulders and get in behind because his first touch is good, and of course you've got De Bruyne and Silva that can pick the passes out as well. But
what did you make of Everton?
They started the game really well, dominated the ball. Right, okay. Well, Villa's first touch in Everton's penalty area was the goal. 21 minutes gone.
Okay.
So Everton started really well, brilliant. I was impressed with Coleman, particularly first half. Digne and Bernard had a good understanding down the left-hand side, started to play well. But it was that little old adage. The talking point coming into the match, and it's something I was asked about, was Everton haven't conceded this season. But Everton have only scored one goal. I think they scored three goals in seven games pre-season against average sides, some average teams. So you know the problem is for Everton. Dominic Calvert-Lewin going in now as number nine there for Everton. Maybe that's a little bit of pressure on himself that's going in. He spins the channels really well. All his work is out wide. Never goes between the middle of the goals. When Moise Keane come on as well, he was doing the same, spinning into channels. There's no one in Everton's side prepared. I tell you what, I'm going to go and get hurt and go right between the middle of the goals and get myself a finish. Now, Calvert-Lewin had the best chance when Coleman set him up in the first half. Should have scored. Probably seen it where it was cleared off the line. And the second half, he will be hit the post and Walcott. So Everton had chances, but midfield, Schneiderlin, no. He's nowhere near the level. He's nowhere near the level. And sorry, but I don't think that. Andre Gomez, I'd have to give him, he's had an off
night. Just a bad night.
He's had a bad night. He has had a bad night.
There was one moment.
Richarlison was awful as well.
Yeah. There was one moment where Gomez passed the ball out over the touchline, meant for Coleman. And Carragher just said on commentary, that's not Gomez. This is his brother. He's a twin brother tonight. It's just one of those weird nights where nothing goes right.
Yeah, that's what it was. Exactly what it was for him.
Have you ever had one of those nights? Everything was horrifically off.
Oh, plenty of those nights. Probably.
No, but where things actually went well. No, that's not fair. Ian Wright, Kev.
Yeah.
Baffled by Emery tactics against Liverpool.
Yeah, so I did hear you talking about this. You actually spoke really well on this yesterday when you were on with Pat. It was...
Ian Wright said, to see the diamond or triangle and to give the space to Alexander-Arnold and Robertson was confusing for me. He said, we just gave them the incentive. We handed them the incentive. Yes, but that's not the full story either. Like, it was almost like Emery thought to himself, these are better than us. Mm. So we're just going to try and give ourselves a puncher's chance here. And I think Emery went out saying there's a 20% chance this could come off and I need Pepe to score a goal for me on the break.
Yeah.
And that was probably that's how he set them up.
Exactly, and a couple of chances to do that, didn't they? He saw a couple of times as well when Pepe, that one time when he's run away from Van Dijk, and Van Dijk's gone, hang on a minute, and he had to maybe change his game up a little bit. He had the great chance when he's gone through, should have scored.
Yeah.
But the way that they played, and I know that you said with playing with a diamond against Liverpool, knowing what the, those fullbacks do, and I heard you and Dan talk about it, and Dan said, if you'd have played Lacazette, Pepe and Aubameyang, would that have been a little bit adventurous? And yes, it probably would have been adventurous, but what it would have done, if you played the three lads with the two lads out wide, it occupies them. So the fullbacks, yes, they are going to continue to go forward, they are going to take the chance, but it leaves Liverpool a little bit more vulnerable, that it's in the back of your mind. If you get a turnover, you win the ball, you can play to Pepe or Aubameyang, Lacazette, whoever's playing in the wide area.
Be 3-on-2 at times.
Yeah, that's the thing. So for all it would have been adventurous, I think it would have just got in the mindset of the Liverpool fullbacks. Okay. But
so did you like it? Did you think it's fair enough, or did you kind of think?
I understood why they did it, but I don't know why they tried to compact that midfield, because Liverpool's dominance doesn't come from the midfield play with the possession of the ball. Everything comes from Liverpool, from one and two touching the middle of the park and shifting it wide quickly, or getting the two wide men coming narrow, running inside fullbacks.
Yeah.
So that was the thing that baffled you a bit. Usually when you use a diamond, you'd use a diamond against City to stop the midfield dominating the possession. Whereas
it's the opposite with Liverpool.
You have to maybe... I'd understand if you went maybe 4-4-1-1 to say, I tell you what, the two wide men for Arsenal, you stay in a wider area, occupy the fullback, double up, because that's where we're going to get caught. Say to your fullbacks, if they run inside, you stay with those wide men wherever it is, and that means you're going to be a little bit more vulnerable to you, the opposition fullbacks getting beyond you.
Yeah.
That's where you've got people in positions to try and deal with that.
This isn't especially a high bar I'm setting here for Arsenal, but it was almost interesting to see Arsenal with a plan that every player knew and they were sticking to, because you know, it hasn't been the case in a while. Did they come out with any credit for you?
No.
I'm talking in the context of who's going to finish fourth, I suppose, Manchester United and Chelsea. Do they kind of look at them and think,
they're still very much in the balance. I don't know, Joe. Judging from that and what I've seen, I saw them against Newcastle first game of the season. I think there was a lot of flaws in that win as well. Yes, they won the game, Aubameyang scoring, but I'd still be very much open on the other two sides. Yeah. The City and Liverpool, and I heard you were talking about it with Pat and Dan last night as well, they are way ahead. You just have to be realistic and say, I tell you what, those two sides are going to go and be first and second. We have to go and say, this is our mini league now. As bad as it sounds for Man United, as bad as it sounds for Arsenal, Chelsea, Tottenham, we have got a mini league on our hands, and that's it.
Liverpool were very good to watch at times on Saturday.
Well, I do think last week's against Southampton, that win that they had, I think that is an incredible win given what happened midweek going to Istanbul, that they've come back. Liverpool side wouldn't have won that game.
Apparently they had physio on the flight back from Istanbul. Like, they had tables out and the physios were getting to work on the players straight away.
Yeah.
Because the preparation was so terrible. I mean, they were back. They stayed the night in Istanbul.
Yeah, yeah.
The players thought, let's try and get a night's sleep, because this business of flying back, you know, through the night isn't very good. And then it was physio on the plane, and then I think they were straight into the game effectively. So it was a huge win in that context.
It was. And they got outplayed. In the first half, they were outplayed before Mane scored the goal. And then, of course, second half, Ings should have got the equaliser. They missed chances anyway throughout the game, Southampton. So that was just one of those games, get over the line, get the job done. And as I said, Liverpool wouldn't have won that game in recent years.
It's a professional win.
It was a great win, a brilliant... That's the sort of win that you go into the dressing room, and I'm sure that Klopp loved that win more than the win against Arsenal, because he knows that actually had... That's the whole club involved in that. As you said, the medical team are involved, Klopp's management team, his coaching staff, everyone is involved in that. And the players know that they've dug out a brilliant result for to
trek
get that.
All the way down to Southampton.
Yeah.
It's grim. I'd say, let's get the hell home, everyone.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And then you can then have that full week training and go, right, we target this game. And it proved it. They're doing way better.
They genuinely look fitter than so many teams, don't they?
I know.
Like, they're just bouncing across the turf by comparison with Arsenal players.
The surprising thing about it, and I spoke about it the first week after the Community Shield game, and I think it was in after the first weekend as well, wasn't it? We were chatting on the Monday. How fit Firmino looks, how fit Salah looks.
Mane hasn't had a break.
Mane, they've had no break. Now, that may come back to bite them, I don't know. How are they going to be managed across the season, maybe in the midweeks, but the fitness levels, how sharp they look, how good Salah's looking. Salah is looking back. Salah's way better than he was in the first half of last season right now. He's playing brilliant football. He's so sharp. He looks so positive. And
Firmino is looking great too.
Firmino, I said about him in the Community Shield, his movement was brilliant. He was causing a lot of problems for Stones and Otamendi, it was. playing on the shoulder defenders, is much the same as we spoke about Everton before. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, his runs are constantly 50-yard runs looping out wide, left and right, which is great. You're going to be under pressure at times. You've got to make those runs. You've got to give your teammates options to hit longer balls. Firmino's movement isn't that. Firmino's movement is just literally standing on the shoulder defenders and I'm going to get in, I'm going to be playing constantly. So when Salah and Mane are coming inside onto the stronger left and right foots, he's just constantly just spinning off the shoulder defenders for little slotty passes. The front three look so sharp. Yeah, they do. Yeah. They look very good.
And I take your point on how they're going to manage all the players over the course of the season. But they do seem to be in a fairly sweet spot now where for the vast majority of games, ideally the front three are there. The back four, he's reverting to what he settled on last year. But that midfield three has huge flexibility in terms of personnel.
Definitely.
And that's, so genuinely, you'd fancy them to win 95% of Premier League games at least with whichever midfield three are there.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a real luxury.
And I think that for all that, whether we've heard Graeme Souness talking about it, about the difference between City and Liverpool midfield, we've had Giles talking about the difference between City. We know City's midfield is way better. Yeah. It is. They can hold on to the ball better. De Bruyne's the best midfielder in the Premier League and Silva's probably the second best midfielder in the Premier League. You have two of the best players in world football in there. So Liverpool are never going to be able to play like that. They're never going to be able to dominate games like City can. Everything about Liverpool is that when sides have possession of the ball, that's when Liverpool come to life. It's almost if the mindset is, right, what are we going to do when Jordan Henderson wins a ball in the middle of the park? Because Jordan Henderson is not necessarily going to be able to he does maybe underrated at times and he does great things on the pitch, but he's never going to be able to pick the passes out like De Bruyne or Silva. But as soon as they win the ball back and Henderson or Milner or Wijnaldum, whoever it was going to be in midfield, the three front lads or the two fullbacks know exactly where to go straight away. And that's where Liverpool are such a threat because they've got so much flexibility in the side.
Yeah. So, that's Liverpool. You mentioned there De Bruyne, the best midfield player in the league, and Silva maybe second.
Yeah.
When Silva was at his peak, and say De Bruyne now, because Graeme Souness said Silva could be the best Premier League player we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Which is a massive statement. Now, he didn't say he definitely is, but he said he's in that conversation.
I'd probably still say De Bruyne. I just love watching De Bruyne. And Silva's great. Silva has the ability to dribble past people and he's maybe got a couple of added things to his game. Mm. But as I'm talking about a passer and a player that can see things that no other player can see on a football pitch, it has to be Kevin De Bruyne. When you're watching him, it's great to watch him in games and watch how he gets himself bits of space. Just sometimes you're watching games on TV and the camera's in a certain spot, and you're watching De Bruyne checking shoulders, looking around him, knowing full well he's marked. So he'll actually just continue just to drift up the pitch. And much the same, I spoke about the difference between Liverpool and City and how they play out from the back. And De Bruyne and Silva, when they're playing together in midfield, they go and play right up near Sergio Aguero, so it allows the two wide men to come inside. They do play wide, but they start from wider positions to come in, and all it does is to try to get midfielder, whether it's for Fernandinho or Rodri or Gundogan, whoever it is, try to get him onto the ball. So you've got those two in advanced positions, and then all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, of course.
And when you get De Bruyne in the opposition's half, he can pick a pass from anywhere. I mean, he can pick a pass from anywhere on the pitch, but particularly when he's higher up the pitch, when he's in the final third, he can do anything. He can pick any pass. And you can see now, he's the best first-time passer in world football, bar none. When the ball's rolling to him, he's already seen where he wants to put the ball. Now, it doesn't always come off for him, but we've seen with the crosses that he's been putting in for the Sterling header last week, was that down at West Ham?
Yeah.
And everything that he does, Bournemouth, I think, actually. But everything he does when it's first time, it's better than anybody in world football. It clearly is, and that's what stands him above anybody else because he's always a step ahead.
Yeah. Sky Sports had a poll. Who's the best crosser in the Premier League?
De Bruyne.
No.
Or Beckham.
Definitely.
I knew you were Beckham.
How's obviously Beckham?
I knew you. I wouldn't
72% Beckham.
I wouldn't disagree.
You can't really disagree with that.
No.
But De Bruyne was second.
Was he? Yeah. There's been a few good crosses. The lads maybe outside that as well. Jason Wilcox playing in that Blackburn Rovers side. Very good crosser of the ball. Chris Waddle would have been another in the early days of the Premier League. Very good crosser of the ball. Stuart Ripley playing in that Blackburn side as well.
Yeah.
Very good crossers. So yeah, there's been good crossers.
Darren Anderton could whip a ball.
Darren Anderton. Damien Duff would be another one.
Was Duff a good crosser?
Yeah, good crosser. Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah.
I thought he was more of a chopper.
Was he a chopper?
I just thought he wasn't.
He was more of a dribbler, wasn't he?
He came to the end line and then he just stabbed that foot at it. Just, you know, chop it in.
Mm.
Where I don't think he was a teamy up, I'm going to whip it in type. I don't think he was a put it on your head.
I think he could have done. I think he could have done.
He couldn't have done, obviously. Yeah. Clearly, he's Damien Duff.
Yeah.
But if you were to say, what's Duff's trademark cross?
I think out of all those players that I mentioned, the Damien was the best dribbler out of them.
100%.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah.
Keep naming good crossers. I want to see how long we go until we get to you.
No,
who else there?
No, there's probably loads of names you could probably throw into the mix. There's lots. And, you
know, I'm trying to think of the Arsenal ones. I wouldn't have put that invincible team. Like, Overmars wasn't a crosser as such.
Irwin and Neville. Gary Neville wasn't a bad crosser of the ball. Irwin was definitely a brilliant crosser of the ball as well when they were coming
Dennis
from fullback.
Do everything, couldn't he? Gary Neville liked a high
cross. Alexander Arnold, the modern day
Gary
one.
Gary Neville liked a high cross now, in fairness to him.
Oh, Neville was a decent cross to the ball.
Okay.
Neville was a decent.
I'm being harsh on him there.
Yeah, you are. Neville was a decent cross to the ball.
Giggs, for all his qualities, you wouldn't say was a great crosser of the ball. He got better as it went on.
I'd say Giggs was the best at crossing on the run, or one of the best at crossing on the run.
Yeah.
Like Beckham would have rarely have been on the run. Beckham's first touch was always immaculate to take him into a position that it was away from the fullback that was getting close to him, so he knew full well that his body shape could always take it around the fullback in front of him, or in front of him, or over him, whatever it would be. And that was what put Beckham apart from anybody else. Yes, the crossing was sensational, but his touch set it up every single time for that perfect cross, and that was the difference, really.
Yeah. Jeez, it must have been quite nice to share a picture with him and see the technique.
Yeah, played a lot against Beckham when I came into the Premier League. Yeah, the combination with him and Neville was, I do think Neville was probably the best fullback I played against.
Really,
Irwin was very good. Don't get me wrong, but he was a hardy shite. He was Neville was, and the relationship he had with Beckham was very, very good.
Well, I'm reading Neville's autobiography at the moment. It's a couple of years old, and you know he's talking about how on paper what him and Beckham did was obviously predictable.
Mm.
You know, it's bog standard 4-4-2 and a bit of overlap, but it was just because they played together since they were 14.
Yeah.
There was a timing that was just very hard for any other pairing to get to grips with, because there was telepathic moments where he knew exactly when to go and what was going to happen, and they could read each other so well. And he was saying that was why, on paper, they should have been stoppable. You know, really, when you think about it, Beckham can't beat you with pace, never going the overlap. And yet, how many crosses did they get in between them?
Yeah, it's true. And
why couldn't you stop them is what I'm asking.
Yeah, Beckham got his space larger down to the fact from unselfish running from Neville.
Neville, yeah.
Neville did a lot of the running just to free up Beckham so he'd get the space to put the ball into the box. But the one thing, I've never spoke to Neville about it, but the one thing that sticks in my mind, every single time the ball was fired into Neville, first thought was always wide man. That was something that was always said to me as a kid growing up, and I'm sure it was said to Gary Neville, and I'm sure it was said to Beckham. If you're in position, but Beckham get in position, fullback on the ball, first option has to be a wide man. Now, a lot of fullbacks now wouldn't necessarily look to the wide man as the first option. It would be maybe to come inside or fire it into a striker's feet. First option, wide man. Second option, into striker's feet. Third option into midfield, or maybe a fourth option would be to try and turn defence.
Mm.
But the first option, always, if it's on, give it your winger. And that's what I used to love when I played with fullbacks. That would, if I got me back to the touchline, ball fired into you. So you know full well you're taking it on your back foot. You've got it in a position where your first touch is immediately taking you towards a fullback.
Yeah.
If you're constantly looking to try to get to the wide area, that means you've not got your body shape right, so your first touch isn't quite right, you're going maybe back towards your own goal.
Yeah.
Your only option is to go back to the fullback then. So that's what strikes me about Neville and Beckham immediately in my mind, that Beckham was always in the position quickly, sprinted to position, didn't idle to that position. When Neville got the ball, immediately bang, first touch into, or first touch out of his feet, second touch straight into him, and that was how I think was key to their success and the understanding.
I've got to go to an ad break here, so just one last one that strikes me about you and Beckham. He had an unbelievable engine. It's one of the lesser talked about things with Beckham, how fit he was. He'd often cover the most in a game. I'd say you two had serious runs up and down.
I had
a very good engine as well.
I used to like playing against. But I used to like playing against because you knew they were the best as well. And the players that they had, you can't underestimate the role that Roy Keane had in that United side and his know-how. If he couldn't find Neville with the ball, it would be immediately into Beckham. So it's a ball's rolling across the pitch, it'd be into him. He would find Beckham in an area where he'd have 10 yards of space, and that would be the ability to get his feet open and put the cross in. And that was maybe the key to it, because I've said to you before, he worked extremely hard off the ball to to get himself in positions to receive it. And if United then didn't have the ball, alternative to that, he would be one working back to try and stop opposition. So yeah, his engine was it was sensational. Yeah, it was.
We need a short break, and the football show is brought to you by Paddy Power. For information on sensible gambling, visit dunlewy.net, dunlewy.net. Short break, and then we'll get Kev's thoughts on what's going on over at Barry and Bolton.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Returning football shirts to the fans. Join the movement today by using hashtag Save Our Shirt.
Now then, welcome back. Kem Kilbane alongside me for the football show this evening. Two clubs in your part of the world, Barry and Bolton, in trouble. Barry, it seems, in huge trouble this evening. They are facing expulsion from the English Football League after the company which were attempting to buy the club, C&N Sporting Risk, said it was unable to proceed with the takeover. So it seems Barry are in real danger now of dropping out of the Football League unless something last minute happens in a big way. They would become the first team to drop out of the English Football League since Maidstone's liquidation in 1992.
Yeah.
You're from the area, I presume, like a lot of English towns in that part of the world, the football club is fairly central to the rhythms of the weekend and a massive thing. Is Barry a big town?
It's not a big town. It's part of Greater Manchester.
Gary Neville's Barry.
Yeah, his mum and dad worked at the club for a long time. I think his mum was still working there until recently as well.
Right.
Big part of the club, yeah. I definitely be right in saying there's very little money in the town. Bury, Oldham, Rochdale, Bolton, these towns, northwest towns have been struggling financially for such a long time. And, you know, for all that we know the wealth that's there in Manchester with United and City, and then up the road at Everton and Liverpool, the bigger clubs. Burnley's only down the road from Bury as well, actually. So that'd be another one that's obviously got a lot of wealth from the Premier League. They've done well. Everything's been managed well. Bury have been a club that I played against them actually as a Championship club under Neil Warnock when I was at West Brom. Did very well. I think I'm right in saying they're a founder member. They've certainly over 100 years, 120 odd years, I think. Founded 1885. They're a club that's very much part of the community, as you were maybe touching on there before. And I mean, this is sad. I don't know where it's going. I don't know how they've got themselves into the position they have. They've overspent, obviously. Got promoted last year when I can't believe how they got promoted last year. They've got a couple of promotions in the last few years and relegations. They've been up and down between League One and League Two. But I don't know where they go to from here. They were given this deadline till today. It looks as though now that
The threat is expulsion, but maybe I presume the Football League will do everything in their power and give them every chance to make
they've it. They've not played a game this year.
No.
That's the thing. They've had no games, and I don't know if you saw the pictures of it today. I saw Barry had tweeted it out. You know, hundreds of supporters around the ground.
300,
today. Yeah. Cleaning the ground, making sure that it was, you know, ready and prepared going into Saturday's fixtures because they were desperate to get the season up and running. Now it's another game that's gone by. I think they're already minus 12 as it is. So it's how much longer can the AFL give them? That's the thing. And they've had so many different deadlines going forward that they've had an extension, they've had more extension, another extension here now until it was a bank holiday over in the UK this weekend. So that was something as well that they've had given another extension till the Tuesday. It's just terribly sad when you see what's happening there at Bury and Bolton as well, given that Bolton were a Premier League club six years ago.
Look, Bury, we're in the Championship in recent times, so it still is a massive fall from grace. Like Bolton, Sam Allardyce's Bolton.
Yeah.
It seemed like they had just become a fixture in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Like they'd reached that size. They'd managed to get that new stadium built. I've been the subject of a bid by Football Ventures. That takeover's collapsed over the weekend.
Yeah. You don't know where these bids are coming from as well.
Well, that's the other thing, yeah. I mean, you could sell in desperation to the wrong people. We don't know much about them. Should a takeover of Bolton fail to materialise by 5 o'clock today, then, and that hadn't happened, so a 14-day notice of withdrawal of their membership of the EFL could be reinstated. The current situation cannot continue, said the EFL over the weekend. On we go as well. Yeah. Same old story.
I mean, I think with
but the, like that is a real massive collapse for a club like Bolton.
For Bolton, yes, because you know playing against Bolton, they were a tough side to play against, you say, under Allardyce, even after Allardyce had gone. They were one of the clubs that you almost think, yeah, they're a Premier League club now, they're well established, well set up. Did they overpay on wages? I'd probably say yes. How much money has come out of the club? Are we going to get any sort of clarity on why this has happened? Because it simply shouldn't have happened. Yes, the parachute payment has run out. They have been out of the Premier League now 5 years, and that's by the by, that every club knows that.
Yeah.
But you've got to obviously adjust your pay within your club as well in accordance with that. So I don't know why they're in the position they are, particularly where they've been. Bury have always been a lower league club as long as I can remember as a kid growing up. Yeah. Yes, they got to a championship, but there wasn't the money available in the championship when I played against them as well. That was the 90s. So they're a side that's the two sides that you can't believe the way that it's gone, given the status within the AFL. Mm. That's all I would say in it, really, because I've known of these clubs all. I'm watching Preston as a kid growing up, Bury coming into town, Bolton coming into town, these teams, big games, big derbies, it would have been for Preston when I was a young lad. So yeah, it's extremely sad, really sad the way that it's gone for both those clubs, yeah.
We'll see what happens. Back to some football from Sunday, because I know you were watching the City game and you kept an eye on Spurs losing to Newcastle as well. Give us your sense of these games.
City were brilliant, weren't they, at times. I think Bournemouth, Eddie Howe touched on it after the game himself, Bournemouth actually caused problems. Bournemouth did what Bournemouth do. They're going to go at sides, but they left themselves vulnerable, and City just put them to bed. And you were speaking about Sterling before as well, when he got into position. Like, he was mid-air and he toe-poked it. Yeah, he just got a little stab at the
brilliant
ball.
Finish.
Quick, instant stab. Keeper couldn't set himself. It was a brilliant finish. Aguero's goals as well. Can anyone stop them? I don't know. They were really lucky not to win that Tottenham game, I thought, the other week. As it is, they should be sat on 9 points now. But that could be the difference come the end of the season. We don't know. We could be talking about that handball decision that's come against them. That's the way that it's been for those two clubs.
What are Spurs then? Because they were dominated completely by Manchester City a week ago. Even Pochettino said, look, it was an annihilation. And I'm sure he had a long drive back to London thinking about the gap between Spurs and Man City after that game.
Oh.
And then to go out and lose to Newcastle at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yeah, I know you were in studio, weren't you? And it was Nathan and Brian that were at the game. And one thing that struck me straight away, or as the game progressed, there was a good game plan from Newcastle. Newcastle was solid, and I saw Alan Shearer did analysis on it on Match of the Day 2 on Sunday evening as well, where they continue what Rafa Benitez did last season. They played three at the back, and it's almost 3-6-1. That's how they're playing. It's 3-4-3 is what they're saying, but the two wide men are tucked right in. It's a six-man midfield because they're trying to condense the midfield to stop sides, get momentum against them. Joel Linton up front, obviously first goal, did well. Movement was very, very good, but they were a threat, Newcastle. And that was largely down to Tottenham's deficiencies. Mm. Tottenham didn't do enough. Harry Kane had a couple of chances. The one where he's maybe just had an earshot at and missed it late on. But they didn't deserve it. They might deserve the draw for all the possession they had.
But it wasn't a smash and grab
as
such.
No, it wasn't.
What do you read into Eriksen on the bench? Do you think that signals his departure then?
That game says to me that you know what Newcastle are going to do against you.
Sure.
Who's your player that you need on the pitch when sides are going to drop deep against you? You need a player who's going to just be able to find himself a little bit of space in the final third of the pitch or entering the final third of the pitch, and he's going to be able to produce a shot from distance. He's going to be able to produce a key pass around the penalty area when everything's very congested, and that's Eriksen.
Yes.
So I don't understand why he's on the bench, because he's still a Tottenham player. If he's a Tottenham player, you have to play him, in my mind. But it seems to me there's an agenda at the club now that he's not committing to us, we'll put him out of the club. And he could be sat there come the end of this week, the European window closes, and he could be still sat there at Tottenham. And then he'll have to play. Yeah. He will play, simply will play. So this is a game that Tottenham are playing with him now. But I don't see it, because Tottenham could be out of the championship race.
Yeah.
Come, I don't know, end of October, because they've already dropped points in two games.
Yeah.
And that's criminal in my mind, I think, at the level that they're at.
On Steve Bruce, he certainly has hit back in a big way, and he said he was disgusted by the comments, that he doesn't really
Did you hear that? Michael Schopper, you'd be aware of Michael Schopper,
yeah,
wouldn't you?
Yeah, I remember Michael. Michael Schopper said in TalkSport that he had talked to senior players who didn't know their roles, didn't know their jobs under Bruce the previous game.
It's not great, that, is it?
Against Norwich.
Yeah.
So that is the ultimate, this guy's like dinosaur. Yeah. He's basically saying, this guy's a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Now, you worked under Bruce.
Yeah.
From memory, he's not hands-on on the training ground. He gets good people in around him.
Coach. I like working. He had Eric Black, who was his assistant manager and first team coach, with us at Wigan, and I thought Eric was great. Mm. The best thing about Eric, I used to think as well, it was how good he was with players that weren't involved in the first team, that weren't necessarily playing week in, week out, how good the training was, how enjoyable it was, but also he was getting to a level that you were right. If you needed to step into a first team game, you were right. You were physically ready. So the fitness side of it was always great. It was good. Yeah. It was good. It was very, very good training. But also, I used to think around Thursday, Fridays, the tactical approach, I think from Eric and Steve Bruges would have come in on a Friday, but particularly Eric, I thought that it was very, very good.
Now, he's no longer there.
Yeah.
So I don't know necessarily if the coaching staff is, but...
Well, he has Paul... Ray Clements' son. So is it Paul Clements?
Well, regardless, you would have to look at their performance on Sunday and say, well, they knew what they were trying to do. You know, they did look like they knew their roles or they knew their jobs, if you take the Michael Chopra criticism.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think one thing I found about Steve Bruce, I was just touching Eric, was very good on the Thursdays. Mm. Steve Bruce used to come into it on the Friday, and we'd work all, maybe that Friday would have been constant teamwork shape. It would have been working on set pieces as well at the end of it, but predominantly we would have been working on 11v11s. Mm. And a lot of lads don't like it. It's not necessarily going to be the sort of work that you want to do. When you want to come in, you want to feel sharp, but it's key to getting results. Yeah. And I think players now recognise that even more and more. You know full well when you've done that sort of work, you go out on a Saturday and it's just pictures in your mind constantly over. You add with that the video analysis work you would do afterwards and in the video analysis room, so you would have covered all bases. And I used to find Steve Bruce was very good with that.
Right.
I used to find his team shape was right. He set up sides to be first and foremost solid, not necessarily adventurous. I played a little bit on the left hand side of midfield for him. I played quite a lot at left back for him, and he just wanted a solid back four.
Yeah.
Pretty much like Trapattoni, essentially. It was like a Trapattoni way of, look, if we're going to get anything from the game, worst case scenario, we draw 0-0. Mm. Anything else is a bonus from games.
It's not sexy football, but it is the opposite of a team going out.
Rafa Benitez does that.
Rafa Benitez
is your manager last season at Newcastle, and Newcastle up to Christmas were dreadful. I think they lost the first three games of the season last year. The home form was awful till after Christmas as well. Hardly picked up a win. I think they had the worst record in the Premier League up to Christmas at home last year, which you think of Newcastle, you think if you're going to get out of the trouble, it's got to be home wins that gets you out of trouble. So Benitez did exactly that with that side. That's why he went three at the back, which at times become five at the back. So as I was saying before, it becomes 5-4, one up front. Mm. It's very negative, but it's damn his limitation of football.
But it's a team who know what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was a bit unfair maybe on Bruce.
I felt that, I thought it was. I thought it was harsh.
Glenn Hoddle, by the way, has been talking about Vincent Kompany. So Vincent Kompany and his Anderlecht player-manager situation has changed. He has decided to relinquish the manager side of player-manager. So they announced this week, the Belgian club, that he was going to relinquish the management side of his role for the rest of the season. They have got off to their worst start in 21 years, 2 points out of a possible 15.
I saw that,
yeah. Glenn Hoddle was basically saying, player management, it's next to impossible. Now, interestingly, he was saying it was more difficult back in my day. And I can see why, because he was saying, we had one assistant, no fitness coaches, very little staff. I had to look at the videos. I had to do the scouting. I had to train. I had to keep myself fit. I had to play. So actually, there's a bit more support for a modern day player manager.
Yeah.
But it still just seems like a concept that
I don't think you can do
doesn't
it.
Work.
Much the same, I think Glenn's probably right. But in what he's saying there, there is more support staff around it. But I do think now that the level of fitness that you need, you know, players now, if he's as Glenn's saying there, maybe Glenn Hoddle's saying there, he has to go and work on the video analysis. Players are doing extra training. when he was doing that. So to get yourself in the shape that you need to be to play modern football, I think it's probably, I'd personally say it's probably even harder to do it now. But I understand what you're saying, that there is support staff around you that can actually help you in terms of tactical work, yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever have a player manager?
No, I didn't.
They're rare enough. I mean, there are not many examples.
No, they're not actually, no. Obviously, Dalglish is the one.
Dalglish is the one, yeah.
A lot of our listeners now wouldn't even be born when that would have been the case with Dalglish. I don't know how many have there been. Yeah, Hudlett was one that sticks out in my mind when he did it as well at Chelsea. Hoddle, of course, did it at Swindon, didn't he? Mm. Yeah, there's not many, I think, that stick out in my mind over it now, really. Now, who else would there have been? Fionn, was he player manager?
Player with a very small P, I'd say. And that's sort of from memory.
Yeah.
But since Dalglish, you'd never say it's been a raving success anywhere,
no,
I don't think.
No, I think Hullett was a success to an extent.
Yeah.
But the thing was, which I think when Hoddle was at Swindon doing it, and again, you might be, Swindon support would probably correct you on it as well, but I think the team played to suit him. He was played in the back three.
Oh, I'd say they did play to suit him.
Yeah. Hullett was the same, back three. He was a centre half, essentially, just used to drop off, play as a sweeper role. You can't play a sweeper now, can you? Mm. Just not happening. You get overrun in midfield, and that's it. You're going to be outplayed.
Yeah.
So you don't have that luxury. So, it's not on the cards.
Vincent Kompany has decided this ain't working.
Yeah. Fair play to him. You know what, though? Fair play to him to make that decision.
Yes.
Because he recognised this is not going to work. There's no chance at it.
Mm. By the way, Conte, talking about how thrilled he is with Lukaku, a bargain buy is his take on Lukaku for 65 million. He scored his first goal for Inter. I was just listening to Lukaku, a podcast he was on a couple of weeks ago. And one, he has an American accent. Yeah, genuinely, it's obviously just watching a lot of American TV or listening to American sports stars or whatever his thing is, an American accent. But two, and I hadn't fully realised this, so his dad was a professional footballer in Belgium up until like 98, 99 territory.
Really?
Yeah. And he said, so, you know, life was good. Then my dad retired and he was just very open about this. He was like, we went into a massive financial hole. So he was saying to the two guys interviewing him, like, he was like, you know those guys who turn up when you can't pay your rent, you know, to evict you? And they're like bailiffs or something. He was like, yeah. He's like, yeah, that happened to me like four or five times in 7 or 8 years. Mm. I had no idea. His mum was a cleaner, worked incredibly hard. So, yeah, that's where he's come from in Belgium. You might have assumed he had an easier life than other players, but he's kind of come up the hard way.
Yeah, fair play to him. Yeah.
So he's at Inter now, we'll see how he does.
Well, Alexis Sanchez looks like he's going to be going in there joining him as well, doesn't he, there? So that's
that. Does. The latest news on that is that Martial's having a scan on a muscle injury, and if it's a very bad muscle injury and he's going to be out for, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 weeks, then they might keep Sanchez on. What's another 10 weeks or whatever it is, till January, well, 500 grand a week.
I was going to say, they're going to have to give him 250 grand a week to get him off the books anyway, aren't they? They'll still be paying him.
Yeah. Well, is your theory on Sanchez that his body deserted him, or he just got so happy with, you know, a gazillion euro that he kind of just down tills a little bit?
I think the former, what you said,
body.
Body. I think far too much football. Yeah, and I think he had a spell over about 5 years where he didn't have a break, didn't he? Yeah. Playing World Cups, Copa Americas and things
insisted
like that.
Insisted on playing as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think that's the case.
Okay. Kev, thanks very much. We're pretty much done for this
evening. Good man.
Cheers.
Good man. Well done, Joseph.
Good job.
Give him a ball and he out of grass. He'll give you a move for the perfect pass. Give him a ball and he out of space. He'll give you a move with godly grace. Ra-ta-ta-ta.